The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hello and welcome to The Situation Report today. My name is Jeremy Stolniker. I am your host, and this is the show where we do our very best to give you the information and perspectives you need to navigate an ever-changing culture. We are right in the middle of election season. This recording today, the one that you're hearing right now, was recorded actually the day after the midterm election, and still a lot of things up in the air. Certainly, the election did not go the way that it was predicted to go. We'll see how it all shakes out when the story is told. One of the things we do know, though, and we've known this for a while, and we even saw this reflected yesterday, particularly in places like Florida, is that a lot of folks, voters who once voted on one side of the aisle have switched their vote. A lot of people, particularly who voted on the left, have now started voting on the right. And man, what an interesting development this has been. I think that a lot of people believe this big red wave that we've been talking about would be entirely the result of that. People on the left going, we don't want that anymore. We're going to vote right. We haven't seen exactly that major of a shift, but we have certainly seen a shift take place. If anything, we have seen a lot of people begin to ask real questions about the party that they have always supported, whether that is left or right. We've been through a period of lockdowns, everything connected to COVID, of course. Now we're dealing with economic issues and so many other questions about the future, questions that as yet have remained unanswered. And so we're looking at those who represent us and asking questions perhaps we did not in the past. It used to be very common to vote along party lines, and now we're asking questions about what exactly that party is going to do when they get into office. These are all healthy questions. One of the guys who has written about this recently, who talks about this, and who I'm really happy to have had a conversation with that I can share with you, is Adam Coleman. Adam Coleman is the author of Black Victim to Black Victor. He's an op-ed writer, public speaker, host of A Good Faith Space, very active on Twitter. He is also the founder of Wrong Speak Publishing. Wrong Speak Publishing, go and check them out. A lot of folks write for them. But he takes a very well-rounded, I guess I'll say, view of the world. He has a worldview that is common sense, a worldview that asks real questions, and a worldview that causes him, and he then encourages others, to vote according to their worldview instead of just the letter next to the name of the person running for office. He speaks so clearly. He thinks clearly. I'm very grateful to have had him on the show. Please enjoy this conversation with Adam Coleman. Before we jump into that, though, I would imagine if you've been to the grocery store recently, you've noticed that things are more expensive. Gas is more expensive. It doesn't matter where you live in this country. Things are more expensive. The economy, our economic future is uncertain. And we have to ask ourselves the question, what is it that we can do to protect our financial future for our families, for our children? What can we do personally? One of the things I would recommend is at least considering adding gold and silver into your IRA, your investment accounts. Take a look, figure out how to do that, and see if that is the right fit for you. The place that you can start is with Lear Capital. Call Lear Capital, and you can get their free precious metals investor guide. You can also ask them about their Lear Advantage IRA that lets you transfer or roll over your old 401k or IRA into a gold and silver tax advantage IRA. Plus, Lear is offering right now crazy shipping, free shipping, and up to $15,000 in bonus gold or silver with a qualified purchase. This is something you at least need to take a look at. You can call for details, 800-489-6450. Lear Capital is the most rated precious metals company on Consumer Affairs with a near perfect rating on Trustpilot. Call them at 800-489-6450. That is 800-489-6450. Calling that number, you will get your free kit. And there,
You will learn how gold has performed during periods of inflation, government debt, interest rate hikes, economic crashes, even wars, and how in all of those gold has been the financial bedrock asset in portfolios. One of the things I love about Lear Capital is that they are an American-owned company, proud to do business with Americans that share conservative values. Write this number down, 800-489-6450. Call them today. Or if you don't want to call, you can click the link below in the show description and the show notes. Check them out. You will do yourself a great service by at least investigating Lear and what they have to offer.
Adam Coleman, thanks for joining me. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
This is a crazy time. So we are recording right now the day after the midterm election. So there's still a lot of unknowns, a lot of things we're not clear on. But I know you're running around and trying to figure some of it out. There's a lot I want to talk to you about, but let's start with the article you just wrote about what we know. And you were mentioning that to me a minute ago. Talk about where people can get that article and then, you know, kind of your perspective on what we do know up to this point.
Sure. So they can go and read all my articles on my Substack. It's adambcoleman.substack.com. So the article I wrote today, actually, just a preface by saying I'm currently in Florida. I went to Ron DeSantis's reelection party.
Nice. Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, it was a great experience. But it was good to actually be there to talk to people who know him and work for him and just have like a better idea about him. Yeah. And it kind of just confirmed what I already felt about Ron DeSantis before the event. But to highlight the article that I wrote, it was just kind of like a gut feeling of realizing certain things after waking up, checking Twitter, checking the results from the prior day. Obviously, Florida was a landslide, and we all felt it was going to be a landslide. And I think there were multiple reasons why it was a landslide. The biggest thing that people within the campaign were noticing is that there were blue districts that turned red. And asking the question, why did they turn red?
Yeah.
Why? What caused them to actually switch? But the thing I wanted to kind of discuss is because I think a lot of people on the right, a lot of Republicans, assume that this would be some mega red wave that would come through. And in some ways, you know, obviously there was progress that was made for Republicans in the House, but there are key elections that I think could have gone a different way if the approach was different leading into it. And so the article is basically saying that Republicans didn't receive a red wave, they actually received a red warning. Right. And I think there are these key elections. And I just use, for example, the race between Dr. Oz and Fetterman.
Yep.
Fetterman
yep.
obviously has cognitive issues. Right.
Right.
In any other election, this would be like, yeah, you don't vote for the guy who just had a stroke.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Dr. Oz, I believe it's been called that Dr. Oz has lost that race.
Yep. Yep.
And so we have to ask the question, why? And it goes back to what I've been saying from the first place. Dr. Oz, one, was a weak candidate. But how did a weak candidate like him make it to that position of winning the primary? It's because he got Trump's endorsement.
Yeah, that's right.
And so while Trump is popular amongst the Republican Party, and understandably so, the problem is that when you reach a general election, Trump doesn't have that broad appeal like he used to. And what I'm trying to tell people is that 2016 is not 2022. 2016, there was intrigue about Trump because he's a familiar name, but not in politics.
Yeah.
And he was also facing Hillary Clinton, who had already lost a general election, or not a general election. She had already lost a primary amongst Democrats previously. So she's not the most favorable person as she's running again. And facing Donald Trump. So people were definitely interested to see what he could do. And he was able to gain people who were somewhere in the middle, who didn't really like Hillary, but were willing to give him a chance.
Yeah.
And so throughout that time, politics, like always, changes. And so Trump hasn't realized that his intrigue, his mysteriousness politically is gone. And so now we know how he governs. Now we know what he'll do in office, or at least we can assume that he's going to keep doing the same thing that he did before, right? We have a political record that we can judge him on. We have a style of politics that we can judge him on, how he's going to respond when, you know, this publication says this about him, you know, how he tweeted, how he interrupted his own message put out by the same people who work for him, right? You see all these different things, and whether some of the chaos was his fault or someone else's fault, but you saw what he can do. And so now that intrigue is gone, right? It's not there. And I'm talking almost on a daily basis to people who voted for him twice, who are saying, I'm done with Trump, right? They voted for him twice. They're interested in someone else. They're interested in someone who isn't as polarizing. And so what I'm trying to tell people is that if you're just an independent or right-leaning independent who occasionally votes Republican, you don't really care, then this is not a message for you. But if you are a Republican, you care about your party and the future of your party. For one, besides everybody talks about Donald Trump's age, how old he'll be. But besides that, you have to understand you need someone with broader appeal. And I'm sitting here in Florida where Ron DeSantis runs away, right? I think it's like a 20-point margin. He runs away in Florida winning Democrat areas. Why? Because he has broad appeal. And we saw it in a small way within the state of Florida. And just to rebuff someone who may say, well, that's within that state. Right. How would he do as far as independence from other places? But if you think about it, what was the one thing that Florida had happen within the past 2 years that other states didn't necessarily have? Massive amounts of people that moved to that state. And you have people who move from blue areas. You can't assume that these were just Republicans living in blue areas. You have to also assume that some of these people were Democrats. Some of these people were independents. Some of these people are going to be in the middle. You know, so he was able to, while taking in an influx of people coming from presumably maybe non-red states, and still keep the state red. I think that matters.
So two questions connected to that. And because Trump is such a major force right now, whether we like it or not in politics, and some love it and some don't, that's not the point. What are the chances of him looking at what happened last night and going, maybe I need to make a different decision? So two things. One, he has been down on DeSantis for some reason in the last couple of weeks, right? And I think that's leading into a primary, and he's already setting the stage for that. So down on DeSantis, and then supporting several other candidates across the country. DeSantis overwhelmingly wins, so the guy he says stay away from, and the candidates that he supports overwhelmingly did not win. Right. So it seems like a reasonable approach would be to look at that and go, okay, maybe I just need to step aside or get behind someone or try to continue to fire up the base or whatever, but not run. What are the chances of that being his conclusion after this?
1%.
So you think it's 1%. So you're saying there's a chance.
You're saying there's a chance. I think there's a 1% chance. The fact that he is on Truth Social putting out how there, I think he put out like 170 wins to, you know, 9 losses or something like that, right, of endorsements. But, you know, his endorsement doesn't matter to someone who's already in a Republican stronghold.
Right, that's right.
Like, common sense. The my point is when you reach a general in a purple state, right, or in a state like Pennsylvania where it's difficult for a Republican to win nationwide because you have Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, right? You can't have someone who's divisive. That is just a losing strategy. Yep. And my whole thing is that, you know, there's a lot of people, I had a Twitter discussion earlier where they're like, well, the voter fraud, right? But the thing is, you have to do everything to make, if there's going to be potential voter fraud, and it's always a discussion as far as how much of that impacts the voting electorate. But you can't deny that Trump doesn't help himself when he's divisive. Right. Like, if we look at, let's say, Barack Obama versus John McCain, obviously Barack Obama won that. That wasn't in contention, right? So if someone, let's say back then, wanted to cheat for John McCain, they would have had to do a really, really good job to cheat to push John McCain ahead of Barack Obama. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, even if this is the case, even if I'm taking everybody's argument into position, it doesn't mean that you make the job harder. Right. Easier for them. You make the job harder for them.
Do you believe that, and this is where I struggle a lot right now. Do you believe that DeSantis can win a primary against Trump because the primary voters are different than the general election voters? Who wins in that contest?
I think so. I think it's definitely possible. And the reason I say that is because, like I said, I talk to a lot of people who are Republicans who have Trump fatigue, right? I'll give you a perfect example. When he said Ron DeSanctimonious, I saw a lot of people saying, oh, I'm done. Like, why would you do that 4 days before the primary? That to me says that you're looking out for you and you're not looking out for the party. Right. And I think also it would have been different if he was to do that towards somebody who everybody thought was a rhino in the first place and no one would have cared. Sure. But they care for a reason. It's because they know that Ron DeSantis is a good candidate. Yeah. And you don't do stuff like that days before an election. So can he win a primary? Yes, I think he definitely can. I think there are enough people where they have some fatigue. Listen, there are legit things that people can, on the right, they can criticize Trump for, right? For the fiscally responsible people, they can say, Trump, you spent way too much money. For the people who are, against the vaccines, Trump keeps pushing the vaccine. Yep. Why? Because he pushed it out there.
It was his thing,
And it was his thing. So there are legit things that people on the right and Ron DeSantis and his campaign, if they were to go forward, can actually pick apart in a legitimate way and look rational while doing so. And I think that is something that that Trump fears. Yeah. I think that's why he all of a sudden took a shot at Ron DeSantis. You know, I think he truly fears it. Now, my concern is that Ron doesn't want to run, not because he doesn't want to run in general, but he doesn't want to run because of Trump. I think that is a huge mistake. And I think if we're looking for someone who's a leader, you cannot be afraid to go against someone who is strong within your party. You have to be willing to face them. And Trump isn't flawless. Right. And Ron and his campaign are smart enough to highlight those flaws, legitimate flaws. He doesn't even have to say January 6th. Sure. He doesn't even have to say anything like that. He can talk about legit things that he did wrong and move forward within the primaries.
Adam, your view of this, your analysis of this is significant for a lot of reasons. You write a lot about this and you've established a platform where others can write on things like this. And so you're very thoughtful, but your perspective is unique in that you don't come from the world of conservatism. This is not where you're from. It's kind of where you've landed. You wrote an article recently, and this is kind of how I came to know you. I voted Republican for the first time, and here's why, I think was the title of it. And I want to get into that, but just for the sake of people who are listening or watching, talk about your background a little bit, how you got into politics, how you became aware of politics, why you write, and then how you kind of made the transition to where you are right now, from I've never voted Republican to I'm at Ron DeSantis's victory party. That is quite a move, by the way.
Yeah. So the very, very beginning was just like, I'm just a regular guy who's basically watching everything that's happening around me, plugged into politics as far as just a viewer. And actually, primarily, I would say even the culture war stuff. And I felt like I didn't have a voice, or at least like people weren't saying the things that I wanted to say, or the way I wanted to say it. So, there are people that I generally agree with, but I don't like how they're saying it, or I think they're missing points. There's like this gray area that no one's talking about. I decided to sit down and write my book, Black Victim, the Black Victor. Took me about 9 months. I self-published it. So basically I went from someone who didn't have a public profile, worked a regular job, to putting myself out there just to see if anybody even cared about the book I wrote, to being here today with over 70,000 followers on Twitter and writing for the New York Post and other publications, all because I just decided to say something. And so I had no real expectations. Everything that's, you know, even just sitting here, you wanted to speak with me is a blessing. And so that's kind of how I came to this moment. And as far as switching over to the other party, I write a little bit in my book, but it was much of a realization that the information that I was getting, I was analyzing it, but I was only analyzing half of the information. I never truly understood the right-wing or Republican conservative perspective, because that perspective was being filtered through a left-wing media, right? They were saying, well, they like this, but the reason they like this is because they're racist, or, you know, some, you know, just something ridiculous. And, you know, and I'm sitting here, and my biggest mistake was just defaulting to trusting the source of information. But once I broke through that, my analysis became much stronger. It's the reason why I can give such a strong analysis now as to what's going on, because I know exactly how the left thinks. I was on the left. I know exactly what it's like to be that person who's a moderate liberal, or someone who's a moderate liberal who's talking to the left wing, right? The far left wing, the progressives. Even when I broke through that media mold, I just said, I want to listen to everything. I listened to progressive media for months, right, to see how they think, what they advocate for, does it make sense? Then I listen to conservative media. So when I criticize progressives, when I criticize the left, I'm criticizing because I know exactly how they think and what they're advocating for. And the reason I'm today criticizing Trump supporters is because, or not all Trump supporters, obviously, but some of them, I'm saying, listen, you guys got to wake up, because I know you love this guy, but if you want to win, you have to understand it is bigger than you. You know, a general election requires that you have the most amount of people voting for your candidate. But if he only appeals to a niche end of a political spectrum, he can't ever win, no matter how much you like him. And I'm, you know, so I'm saying this with love to the people, because I am now exposed to the right. I talk to Trump supporters all the time, and I think they're great people. But I think that there is a perspective in politics outside of Trump supporters that everybody that doesn't understand that the middle of the pack matters a lot, right? I think it's somewhere like 25% of the voting population is, I'm sorry, I might be messing this up, so forgive me. But it's like 25% of people who vote are Democrats, 25% who are Republicans. That means that there's 50% that's somewhere in the middle. You have to fight for the people who are in the middle, right? Because those are somewhat swing voters. You know, I talk to people who say, I'm a swing voter. You know, I voted Republican and I voted for Democrat, depending on what's going on. Those people exist. And not everything is a hardline position like, oh, you're an independent because you can't take a side. No, that's not how people work.
Right.
So.
Is your family background on the left? I mean, were you raised in a culture of this is – like I was raised very conservative. I was raised definitely on the right. I have had to come to a point in my own life and being in the military and being around people and trying to read history and understand has helped to form that in me and make it my own. But was your background that, and then you came to a point where you looked around and went, there's something not right here? How did that evolution take place?
So I would say, you know, politically, my family is kind of apolitical. Politics wasn't, you know, in my family to discuss. So I got into politics because I was just interested.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, you know, I feel like I should know more. So let me just get involved in it. But here's the thing. For me, my introduction to politics was from a racial angle. It was an ex-girlfriend of mine. She said she would tell me more about politics. She was more politically inclined than I was. And she said, the Republicans are racist and Democrats are for black people. And so that was my starting point. And I just kind of went from there.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it was what broke me out of it were contradictions. It was contradictions from the media. It was contradictions of certain things happening. The other thing was exposure, independent media platforms. I can't tell you how many times I listened to Joe Rogan, heard someone say something that I had never heard before. Yet I'm like, I'm watching stuff every yeah. day. How come yeah. I never heard about yep. this? You know, I talk about a little bit in my book. While I was traveling abroad, I met this guy who was British while living in Spain. And we became friends, and we would have conversations back and forth after I came back home. And one day he told me he was for Brexit. And I'm like, isn't Brexit for these racist white British right, people right. who don't like foreigners?
right.
And, you know, I'm thinking of that to myself in my head, but I had good faith in him because he's been nothing but nice to me and very intelligent guy. So I asked him, well, why are you for Brexit? And he said the United States would never allow an outside governing body to tell it what to do. And I said, that makes a whole lot more sense yeah. than the, yeah, they're all just racist narrative.
right.
Like, and so from there, he's actually the one who introduced me to Thomas Sowell.
Interesting.
He's one of the people who introduced me to all different types of libertarian, independent thinkers. And so, you know, I think those two big things was just contradictions stated by the mainstream media, and then just being introduced to people, even by accident, who thought differently than me, but I had good faith in yep. them. And so I was willing to hear them out and just go on my own journey from there to decide what makes sense for me.
There's an entire new economy being created right now, filled with patriotic companies that have had enough of cancel culture and the left. One you can support every day, and all you have to do is get dressed. I'm talking about Undertak boxers. These have to be the greatest boxers ever made, probably because they have literally been tested by special forces operators. They're made with high-quality material that's antimicrobial, anti-pilling, and moisture-wicking, so you stay fresh and dry all day long. They come with a sturdy yet comfortable waistband that doesn't crack or loosen. Undertak is durable, ultra-thin, and shrink-resistant. Here's the best part. They're almost 30% less than the woke designer brands with the non-binary models. GetUndertak.com. That's GetUndertak.com. 20% off site-wide with the offer code, but only with the offer code SITREP20. SITREP20. Support a great American company that's pro-America, pro-Second Amendment, and pro-military. Satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. GetUndertak.com. That's GetUndertak.com. Offer code SITREP20. And that makes so much sense. That is the path that you would hope everyone would go down, but unfortunately, that's not the path most people go down. One of the things that you wrote about in your article and you talk about is the Democrats' position on life and kind of the radical mm-hmm. position they've taken on life. We've talked a lot about this, and I don't think this would be new information to anyone that the mainstream narrative for the Democrat Party is abortion at any time for any reason. I mean, it's insane that we've come to that place, but that's where we are. How has the left become so radicalized on things like the abortion issue and like the gender issues and these other issues that have always been conversations, but now these are upfront, out in the open, main plank issues that they're standing on right now? How did the Democrat Party get to that? And on the other side of that, the other side of the scale, why has the Republican Party not stood more strongly against these things? DeSantis has, but many in the Republican Party have not. So how did one kind of go this way, down, and the other one is just out in the front, in your face all the time with that?
So I think the best way of putting it is that Democrats have gotten politically lazy, and they decided to appease the progressive left without doing progressive things, right? So one thing I noticed about the Democrat establishment is that they show signs of, I hear what you're saying,
right?
And there's no effort in saying trans children should be able to transition,
right?
There's no political effort to just state that, right? But as far as legislative matters,
yeah.
have they really done much that's progressive? Not too much, not too many things. On the state level, it's a little bit different. Like Gavin Newsom is willing to do some crazy nonsense. Sure. And California is just a mess on its yep. own. So we're not even going to bring
that's
that
my
in,
state. But... That's where I am. So yes, I'm living that every day. You're absolutely right. Yes.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. But as far as like the on the national federal level yep. politics, the Democrat Party has shifted away from even just showing that they are of a liberal value,
right?
Which in the in the actual sense of the word, of being free speech, of allowing people individuality and to do things as they want and as they please. That was the party that I liked, right? And even to this day, that, and see, this shows you how politics change, because now the right is talking about free speech, right? And so because of that, now I'm on the right.
Sure.
You know, so it's, you know, politics is weird like that. But I think generally speaking, the Democrat Party has become politically lazy. They've allowed the progressives to get a louder voice. They've allowed the progressive solution to become the correct social solution. And much of the political powers have basically succumbed to the pressure of progressives after the death of George Floyd, especially. But I would say the two key moments were the death of George Floyd and the pandemic, where they started taking on this progressive vision of the world, of the society. But George Floyd was like the floodgates opening, as far as, that's when you started seeing like DEI everywhere. That's when you started seeing obviously Black Lives Matter everywhere. That's when you started seeing this major push to teach sexuality within to classrooms. Why? Well, because we have to make everybody feel welcome and good, including people of color, right? That's when you started hearing all these clues. That's why you start to hear Joe Biden saying that the hurricane is going to be bad, especially for people of color. You know, just like anything arbitrarily, what they're doing is it's a socially progressive playbook that's off-putting, and they don't realize it. And the biggest problem I see for the Democrats is that hubris is their anchor, right? Hubris keeps them down and prevents them from actually making a change and realizing that this isn't working, right? Instead, they double down. And here's also the other problem with not having that red wave. Not having that red wave doesn't give the Democrats an opportunity to be like, oh man, maybe we really did fuck up.
Right. I think that is so a lot of gains have happened, and we're waiting to see how some of the other races shake out. But I think the Republicans in a normal environment could say this was a good midterm for us. We did a good job. But without that red wave, the mandate, so to speak, to moderate the liberal behavior has not come. And I think that will be the narrative. Go back to George Floyd. How was George Floyd, that incident? We've had racial issues in our country since forever, I guess. Why was that event so significant toward the progressive agenda or normalizing the progressive agenda?
I think the video. I think the video really, it allowed for a really stark picture to be painted.
Was that something that progressives were waiting for something like that to happen, and now they have the meme, they have the picture, they have the video, so this is the reason we can do the things we've wanted to do?
Yeah, and I think it was like this weird perfect combination of that moment for George Floyd matched together with the frustration of the pandemic and being locked up, and then it was just like a powder keg of people who just went outside and just chaos started happening throughout that year. But I don't know. Part of me thinks that the years of watching, you know, these progressives within colleges, purple hair feminists, and all this other crazy stuff, we were thinking that when they would hit real life, that real life would hit them back, and then that they, you know, shake out of this. Or at least be like a low level feminist or something like that. Low level progressive. But the reality is that for every passing year, every year that these people are graduating college and they're entering the workforce, but the difference is that the old people who are running the show are leaving and the newer people are coming in and have been slowly introducing things, slowly changing things. So I kind of see it as when a tragedy like George Floyd happens, people look for solutions, and the progressives have been fostering this solution for a long time. And on the right, the problem is that they had no solution. And in some cases, people see the right as saying that there isn't a problem, right? And how do you convince that there is, how do you convince people that there isn't a problem when they actually feel like, I'm watching this, there's a problem right here.
Right.
So the progressives had a solution, whether it was an actual solution or not, they portrayed it as being a solution. And that solution was anti-racism. That solution was DEI in corporations, right? Their solution was pushed forward. And as far as the Democrats go, they fell along with it too, because they were looking for an easy solution politically that sound, you know, like, oh, we have the infrastructure already. Yeah, let's just move forward with it. But now we're starting to see the ramifications of it and how it turns a lot of people off. So I think the only way that this doesn't work out for the Republicans is if they mess it up for themselves.
Interesting. Now I have a couple questions. So here's the first one. Why aren't more people like you? Why don't more people vote their character and conscience over party? Because what I'm hearing from you is your position has remained essentially the same, your worldview, but the parties that we have the option to vote for have changed and shifted. And so you're putting your support behind the people that best represent you. That's what I'm hearing from you. Why don't we all do that? Why are people unable to look at, and again, not to go back to the abortion issue, but to issues like the abortion issue. It's absolutely insane to me that we see so much polling that would indicate that most Americans are not in favor of late-term abortion and abortion on demand and all these issues, and yet we continue to elect politicians, state governments, here in California, in Michigan. Just yesterday, we, as an electorate, decided these things need to be part of the state constitution. Mm-hmm. Where's the breakdown between I know what's right or what I believe, there's character, there's conscience, but I'm still going to vote for these people instead of those people? Why are we unable to do that?
So I think there's a human nature to find some sort of group association. You know, I'm not trying to pick on Trump supporters, but I think it's like the easiest thing to kind of discuss. Like if you think of it from like I'm a sports guy. And when you think of it from a sports situation, you have Trump supporters who actually a lot of them used to be kind of apolitical.
Yeah.
Who now found a team.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Trump is associated with the Republicans and they follow the team of Trump. And so they wear his uniform. They wear the hat,
right?
You know, they wear the shirt, they have the paraphernalia, right? That is their team. And we find some sort of group association within politics, like how we do at a sports team, right? So if you're a fan of a particular team and you go to a stadium, you sit next to a guy, you have no idea who he is, but you see he's wearing the same uniform or showing he has the same hat.
Yeah.
You feel some sort of association with that. And I think that there is a lot of political association off the strength of a team, of a familiarity with the team. Some of it is generational. Some of it is my family, we raised this way and I, you know, we felt the same way. I think ultimately what it comes down to is that a lot of people vote for certain politicians for different reasons, right? So of what is my strongest interest is protecting children. For someone else, it's like economics, strictly economics, right? And for someone else, it may be due to rhetoric. Oh, this person doesn't seem like a nice guy.
Right.
So I understand people's frustration because you may see someone as like a complete threat to our society who wants to do all types of crazy stuff and put in things that are communistic like. But for someone else who's working a 9-to-5 and then after work, they have to take care of their parents and then here come their kids. And all they have is about 10, 15 minutes of turning on the television to say that Donald Trump is a devil and he's all these terrible things.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have time. You only have how we interpret anything else when it comes to a person. It's the same reason why when they go campaigning through like Ohio or something like that, through a battleground state, they go into the diners, right? And then they talk to the diners. They're like, you know, he seemed like a nice guy.
Right.
You know,
right.
I asked him two questions and he gave me a decent answer. I'll vote for him.
Right.
Right. Why? Because that candidate had enough charisma to go over to a complete stranger and just have a conversation with them. And the guy got a vibe off of him that maybe he's genuine, right? So we're always looking for genuine cues. Like even last night, Ron DeSantis is right in front of my face and he's speaking. And so I'm interpreting, is what he's saying of a genuine nature?
Right.
And interestingly enough, my plus one was a psychologist, and we're kind of, me and her are both into obviously psychology, and we're analyzing the different donors and people that we're meeting.
Right.
And we're like, what'd you think of that person? Ah, they seem genuine. And then actually funny enough, there were a group of donors who are like, who I would call like salt of the earth. Right. And I could tell within just 1 minute, I like these people.
Yeah. Right. Right.
You know, and it's, that's how we treat politics sometimes, because politics is ultimately people. It's a people orientation. And from a politician standpoint, they're trying to appeal to people, or at least they should appeal to people. The Democrats, it's questionable how they do that, but but they're trying to at least appeal to people. And so I just think that people are just doing the same thing that they do with anything else. When they move about life, they'll have short-term interactions with people, and they're just kind of figure out, like, I like this person, or I don't like this person. Or that person says one thing, and this has happened to me. The person says one thing, you're like, I don't like that person. Like, I don't even like how they said that.
Yeah.
And I know nothing else about them. But that's what we have to do. We have to make snap judgments, and sometimes we do that in politics.
So if it is the Republican Party's, you know, future to lose, particularly the presidency, what should the Republican Party be doing right now? What should they be doing over the next couple of years to make those connections, to be the bridge to those people who right now, you know, I don't know if they're undecided or they can be swayed. I certainly believe the rules of elections have changed. People are deciding earlier who they're going to vote for. They're not waiting until election day. So there's a lot at play there. What should Republicans be doing right now? They looked at yesterday and went, okay, that didn't work out the way that we thought it was going to. The presidency is not guaranteed. We need to start doing these things right now. What are those things?
The first thing is, and whether it's Republican or Democrat, the thing I learned about politics is you cannot play fantasy football with politics.
That's good.
You can't say, oh, we'll just have Trump and DeSantis on a ticket. Or no. We'll have Trump for 4 years, and then we'll have DeSantis do the other. Like, that never happens. It never works, right? Within politics, who is hot has to run with it. If you do not run with it at that time, there is no guarantee. For all I know, in 4 years, there's going to be a rising star in the Republican Party, and it's not Ron DeSantis. Or 5 years from now, Ron DeSantis does something that is seen as negative and questionable, and his star just dies. So from a political standpoint, you have to run with who is hot at the right time, and right now is the right time to back Ron DeSantis. And even more so, like, this, these midterms showed us that the Trump stamp on people is not the kingmaker thing that we thought it was.
Right.
You need strong candidates. And sometimes Trump's name actually makes a candidate win worse. Right. I was actually just talking to someone about Lee Zeldin, and they know him personally. He's a good man. And he has a possibility of winning. But because he did certain things with Trump, he is seen as a lackey for Trump.
Yeah.
And it's unfair to Lee Zeldin, right, that he has this label.
Yeah.
But that's the reality, is that Trump, his doing or not his doing, or however people see it, Trump's name is not a uniting name at this moment. It is a divisive name. It is a name that exhausts people even on the right. And the... what they need to do is either back someone like Ron DeSantis, because he is hot right now and he is likely to remain hot, especially after a landslide win. Yep. I mean, Florida is considered a battleground state, right? And
crazy.
And so he had a landslide win. That should tell you something, right? And this doesn't happen often. It is the most obvious thing to me that you go with Ron DeSantis. You have to move forward with him, and you have to start distancing yourself from Trump. The problem is Trump, right? Trump has a lot of push and a lot of influence. The most ideal thing, which would, I honestly, like we said earlier, is like a 1% chance of happening. The most ideal thing is that Trump does not run. Trump runs in the background you know, as far as not even selecting candidates, because what ends up happening is like, I was selected by Trump.
Yeah.
What he can do is be influential in the background. He can be someone who has a PAC, who donates money to whoever's campaign, right? He can still have influence. He doesn't have to completely disappear and die off in politics.
Right.
But he cannot be the front man of the band because it's not working. Yeah. People don't like the lead singer anymore.
Right. Man, so much more we could talk about. But Adam, I appreciate your insight. You're so thoughtful and articulate. It's very, very helpful. Where can people follow you on social media, of course? But you write a lot and you put out a lot of content. Where can people follow you?
Definitely on Twitter, at wrong_speak. Definitely go to wrongspeak.net. You know, I have different writers who write through there, and we're starting to go down the avenue of publishing other people's books within the next few months. As far as myself, definitely go to my Substack, adambcoleman.substack.com. And I also write pretty frequently for the New York Post, almost on a weekly basis now, amongst other publications. So December is going to be the month where I'm stepping it up even more. I'm going to be writing a lot more. And anybody who's going to America Fest, I'll be there. I'll have a table. And you can get a signed copy of my book.
Awesome. Adam Coleman, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate your time and your insight, and look forward to connecting again. I'm sure there will be other things we could talk about. So we'll do this again, hopefully soon.
Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would imagine if you've been to the grocery store recently, you've noticed that things are more expensive. Gas is more expensive. It doesn't matter where you live in this country. Things are more expensive. The economy, our economic future is uncertain. And we have to ask ourselves the question, what is it that we can do to protect our financial future for our families, for our children? What can we do personally? One of the things I would recommend is at least considering adding gold and silver into your IRA, your investment accounts. Take a look, figure out how to do that, and see if that is the right fit for you. The place that you can start is with Lear Capital. Call Lear Capital, and you can get their free precious metals investor guide. You can also ask them about their Lear Advantage IRA that lets you transfer or roll over your old 401k or IRA into a gold and silver tax advantage IRA. Plus, Lear is offering right now crazy shipping, free shipping, and up to $15,000 in bonus gold or silver with a qualified purchase. This is something you at least need to take a look at. You can call for details, 800-489-6450. Lear Capital is the most rated precious metals company on Consumer Affairs with a near perfect rating on Trustpilot. Call them at 800-489-6450. That is 800-489-6450. Calling that number, you will get your free kit, and there you will learn how gold has performed during periods of inflation, government debt, interest rate hikes, economic crashes, even wars, and how in all of those gold has been the financial bedrock asset in portfolios. One of the things I love about Lear Capital is that they are an American-owned company, proud to do business with Americans that share conservative values. Write this number down, 800-489-6450. Call them today. Or if you don't want to call, you can click the link below in the show description and the show notes. Check them out. You will do yourself a great service by at least investigating Lear and what they have to offer. We were not made to live in isolation. Sadly, many of our veterans feel they need to fight their battles alone. This self-isolation has led to the staggering statistic of more than 20 veterans taking their lives every day.
A lot of guys end up drinking, a lot of guys end up losing hope. Some of them will go to the VA and they'll try to get, you know, prescription medications to help with PTSD. You know, they'll get pills for anxiety, they'll get pills because they can't sleep, now they'll get pills for depression. Before they know it, they're taking 12 different medications. And when it's not working out, these guys lose hope, and that's why there's 23 guys a day committing suicide.
The mission of Mighty Oaks is to eradicate the veteran suicide epidemic and help our warriors change their legacies. As a result, we've been able to help over 4,000 veterans and first responders by equipping them with the tools they need to live the lives they were created to live.
Everything they said just kept hitting me in the heart over and over and over again. It's like all the things that I didn't know that I needed to hear. And I opened my heart to God that week, dude, and like, I've been a different person ever since.
Our faith-based, peer-to-peer approach has one of the highest success rates of any program available today, offering hope and understanding to those who need it most. We provide our programs and resources, including travel, at no cost to our warriors.
I remember talking to a licensed social worker who actually handed me a pamphlet to Mighty Oaks. So I went. And I'm glad I did.
By aligning their lives to biblical principles, these men and women are able to lead their families, their communities, and our nation. Our mission is to serve and restore our nation's warriors and families who have endured hardship through their service to America, and to help them find new life purpose through hope in Christ. It's your generosity that can make a difference in the lives of the men and women who have fought for our country and our freedoms. Now that they're home, don't let them fight alone. Learn more at MightyOaksPrograms.org.
Appreciate that conversation with Adam. Please go and check him out on social media. He's very active on Twitter and on his Substack, writes often, and is very much someone who's out in the front, a young guy dealing with a lot of these issues, breaking these things down. He thinks clearly. He speaks clearly. Do yourself a favor and follow him. And I know that you'll be happy that you have done that. If you have not yet subscribed to this podcast, please subscribe. Now is the time to subscribe. Do that right away and then share this content out with others. One thing has become clear. In the next few years, we need good information and we need to hear the right perspective from people who understand what's going on and can really condense that and bring that into a format that we can understand, that we can take it and we can make decisions based on what's actually happening. Having the perspectives we need to navigate an ever-changing culture. That's what we talk about. This show does that. And I would encourage you to follow along, to share the content out with others. And we look forward to having great conversations in the future. Again, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.